I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Bees probably scare a lot of people. Some of us think wasps are the same thing. I'll ask my next guest now about bees and their importance. We all know they're dying off, and a new book encourages us to do our part and make our gardens and neighborhoods places where bees can cultivate their numbers and continue their vital part in our lives. Lori Weidenhammer has written Victory Gardens for Bees, a DIY guide to saving the bees. In it, she tells us about bees' part in our ecosystem. She talks about what we've been doing and contributing to their decline and what we can do to bring them back. The concept of the Victory Garden, usually associated with gardens that were grown during the First and Second World Wars, I'll get Lori to tell us how to grow one's own Victory Garden. Originally from Cactus Lake, Saskatchewan, Lori Weidenhammer is a Vancouver-based artist who appears as the Queen Bee at schools and community events. Her blog is at beespeakersaijiki.blogspot.ca. This new book is published by Douglas and McIntyre. Please welcome to the Plant Online program in Winnipeg last week, Lori Weidenhammer. Ms. Weidenhammer, good morning.
Hi.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So you live in Vancouver. What are you doing in Winnipeg this week?
I'm on a book tour. So it's fun because I get to look at bees all across Western Canada. So I've been chasing bumblebees in sage and gardens from the Okanagan to Winnipeg so far.
Is because we all hear about the decline in the bee population, and that's, I guess, in the Western world, that's something. I mean, there isn't a part in say North America where the bee population is larger than say another part.
Well, it's interesting. There are many species of bees in Canada. And people think of the honeybee as being the only bee that's having a problem. But honeybees, the European honeybee that we actually have in Canada, is Apis mellifera. And she actually comes from Europe. So these bees come from Europe, and they've been imported to help us with pollination services. But Canada has an incredibly rich biodiversity of native bees. And in fact, in British Columbia, we are the most species-rich province. We have 451 native bee species in BC.
And so, of the 451 species, are they all declining, or are some thriving more than others?
That's a good question, and it's very difficult to count native bees. I mean, in beehives, yeah. You can weigh hives, you can estimate populations, and the sort of recent losses that they've been estimated, for instance, in the United States, continues to be about 40% decline in recent years. But with native bees, because it's difficult to count them, it's difficult to know what we have lost, but species are disappearing. And so it's very alarming. In fact, it's a global crisis. And the recent statistics that come out from the United Nations say that 40% of invertebrate pollinators, including bees, are in decline, which is very serious because bees are a very vulnerable species and their population can crash very quickly. And of course, they're so important because they pollinate so much of our nutrient-rich foods and even some of our medicinal plants.
And what have you seen because of this decline that's affected us? I mean, I guess to sound selfish here for a second, as a human, how has this affected us? And are there things that you can point to in terms of how, I guess, this decline has been felt by people?
Yes. It really comes apparent in things like the blueberry crops. So on both ends of Canada, in Nova Scotia and British Columbia, farmers do notice when there's not enough bees to pollinate their blueberries. And so that's one example of a case where it's really apparent that, you know, we're trying to create these fields of nutrient-rich superfoods like blueberries, but we are losing the bees that pollinate them. And so it's called a pollination deficit. And beekeepers that hire honeybees get concerned because they need honeybee colonies to pollinate their blueberries, but sometimes there's just not enough to go around. And so that means that they're not, their crops are not at their optimum. And with what happens also is there's this kind of catch-22 where the ideal blueberry field actually has forage for native bees, because bumblebees, for instance, are better at pollinating blueberry flowers than honeybees, because they have a special skill called buzz pollination. So they're amazing creatures, and they have this special gift to be able to hang on to those stamens and shake the pollen out of them. And this makes your blueberries nice and big and ripe. And so it's important, in order to attract bumblebees, is to create forage for them all during the year that they're up and active and creating their nests. And that's from February to the fall, until they hibernate in the fall. So blueberry fields with that support bumblebees are actually more economically viable than the ones that bring in honeybees. And the thing is, the more that you crowd your fields with honeybees, there's competition with the native bees, and so they will actually retreat and go somewhere else.
The decline in the population, I mean, we have had a part to play in that, whether it's the use of pesticides or, say, destroying habitats. Climate change, I mean, we have a role in that, I suppose. Because of, say, how the seasons have changed, I mean, you've noticed here in Vancouver that it was quite warm in the spring. And our winters have changed in terms, sometimes they're very cold, sometimes they're mild. That obviously affects the lifespan of bees, doesn't it, or the numbers of bees?
Yeah, so it's very complex. There's many, many factors that affect bees, and one of them is basically loss of habitat. So urban sprawl and monoculture, where there's lots and lots of plants of the same kind of plant that only blooms for a short period of time, and doesn't provide forage for bees, that's a main factor for their decline, and we can help by providing forage for bees. Another one is pesticide use, and most recently a new pesticide called the group called neonicotinoids, which have been shown to be very toxic to bees. In fact, they're neurotoxic. And unfortunately, the very plants that people are buying at nurseries, apparently one in two of them have actually been treated with these pesticides. People don't even know this, that's what keeps me up at night. I'm very, very worried about this. And then, of course, climate change does play a role, because what happens is sometimes bees are actually evolved to pollinate a specific plant. And if that plant isn't blooming while the bee is up and active, if that relationship gets unhooked, then the flower can't pollinate the bee, and the bee can't survive because it lacks the bee. And so what happens also is it can stress bees out, because it will be very dry, and bees need plants that have copious amounts of nectar, and that means those plants need to be watered. So if you do have water restrictions in your neighborhood, it's actually important to water the bees that the plants that support bees, because that will provide them with nectar. And any kind of environmental stress, of course, is going to affect the bees.
What's the difference between nectar and pollen?
Oh, good question. So nectar is liquid, and it's a sugar, and that's what the bees drink to give them energy. And then the pollen is the protein that they feed to their babies. So it's that kind of powdery substance that you see produced by stamens in flowers. Mm. And so bees are such good pollinators because they take that pollen, which is the male part of the plant, to the female part of either the same plant or another plant, and they allow that plant to continue to live.
Now, when we hear of bees, and you know, people are afraid of bees because they think they're wasps. Now, in the book, you draw the distinction between the two of them. I mean, are wasps as useful to, say, the gardens, to our ecosystem, as bees are?
Well, wasps do get a really bad rap too, because they can sting. And there is a theory that bees actually evolved from wasps. Wasps are carnivorous, and so they actually, a lot of them are anyway, And the wasps that are carnivorous are good in your garden because they take away some of the little caterpillars and worms and pests that are going to eat your plants. So they do actually provide a function in the garden. Plus, they're really good bird food. Birds eat them. Mm. And so they do play a role. And there's, like bees, there's many, many species of wasps. And so there's other wasps that play a different role in the garden. And with bees, the thing is, there are two kinds of bees that could potentially sting you in Canada, and that one is the honeybee, which is the imported bee, and they're a social insect, so there are two guard bees that often come, and if you're near the hive, they'll check you out, and they'll see if you're a predator, are you a bear, and, you know, if they don't like you, they'll give you a warning, they'll bonk you on the head, or they'll sting you on the nose if you're really giving them a rough time. And then there's the bumblebees, and bumblebees, you know, they're lovely, gentle bees, and you're more likely to be stung if you sit on one or step on one in your bare feet. They're not up to get you. But my rule of safety is look both ways before you cross the bee. Just be very slow around bees. And then don't mess with the nest. Don't jive with the hive. That will keep you away from those stinging bees. But actually, all the rest of the species of bees don't even sting. There's so many more non-stinging bees that people don't even notice. And I call them the ticklish bees because they'll land on you and they might lick you, but they're not going to sting you. Another great thing to know is that none of the males of any bee species can sting. Huh. They're the gentle bees.
So if a bee starts hanging around me, me or anyone else really, the inclination is to swat. So I guess the bees are clever enough that they can sense that they're being threatened, and so that's when they sting you?
Yes, and usually it's when you're hot and sweaty and if you've freaked out. So, you know, I've seen someone wearing a hoodie, a bee has flown into the top of their hood and get tangled in their hair.
Yeah.
And, of course, that, you know, it makes you afraid because that's the normal response is fight or flight, right? So you're just like, freaking out. And then if the bee does get frightened, it will sting you. And then the thing is most of the time it's not a problem. It's more of a nuisance and it just hurts like heck for a couple of minutes and then it itches. But if you're allergic to bees, then you have to take special precautions. So if you have an anaphylactic allergy to bees or wasps, then you've always got your EpiPen with you so that you know that you just put your pen in and you're going to be okay.
Yeah. And you mentioned a moment ago that they're social.
Yes.
And so your experience with them is that you can get along with them, right? It can be rather, it's obviously a beneficial relationship to us humans. But in your own garden, say, I mean, you find that they're playful even?
Oh, yeah. It's funny because I've touched lavender with my fingers. And then a honeybee has actually come and licked my hand. Mm. And if you know that there's a male bee sleeping in a flower, as often happens, you can actually pet it with your finger. And it's very lovely.
people who hear you speak at events and the sort or in schools, do they ask you about just how this relationship or this like friendship, if you will, is began with bees? How that began with bees?
Well, sure. You know, I grew up in Saskatchewan in the middle of the prairies, and I was lucky enough to live by a lot of wildflowers in the pasture nearby. And so I was a bit of a pixie dream girl, and I was always out in the pasture with the flowers, and, you know, bees were just a part of that. And when I realized how important bees were to flowers, that's when I really started getting interested in them. And, of course, I'm concerned with food security, and so that's another reason. My father was a beekeeper, and my grandfather was also a beekeeper. And so I have spent a lot of time around bees, and it's just a normal, natural part of my childhood and a part of my life that I really enjoy. And I also found out about this tradition, which is telling the bees. And as an artist, I got really excited about it. So there's this tradition that if there's a birth, a death, or a marriage, it's really important to tell the bees because the bees were considered to be messengers to the spirit world. And actually, when I was in the Okanagan, I just talked to a woman who grew up in Devon, and she said that the tradition is still alive and well in Devon, which is one of the original places where the tradition was formed. And so I started doing this with people at farmers markets and meetings and on the All Souls Day. And I found this to be a really interesting way to create a culture around people interacting with bees. And bees are so important to our lives. We really do need to be talking more about them and celebrating them and just, you know, really coming together to support them.
Yeah, and a great way is to have your own victory garden, if you will. And I mentioned off the top the concept of the victory garden and how that helped during the war years. You have these designs in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And so one assumes, because there's great variety in the plants and the vegetables, the flowers and the sort that you have in these plants, that if one's garden was just roses or just tomatoes,
mm-hmm.
that's not as beneficial to the bee population as if you had this variety.
That's exactly right. So you want biodiversity because you want to attract as many different kinds of bees as possible, and you also want plants that bloom all throughout the season. So it is important to think about that when you're designing a garden. And in my neighborhood in Vancouver, which is Mount Pleasant, mm-hmm. lots of people are putting gardens in their front lawns and they're growing food, but they're also putting flowers out because people love flowers. I mean, what's not to love? And the bees love those as well. So there's also little tricks that you can do when you are feeding yourself, which is letting some of your vegetable plants go to seed or flower, like kale. So if you let your kale bloom after the winter and the spring, it actually feeds the bees, the mason bees, the Blue Orchard mason bees that pollinate the cherry trees, absolutely love kale flowers.
Hmm.
So that's a really simple thing you can do, and people in my community garden have been doing it. And that way also, those, if you want, you can save the seeds after those flowers have been pollinated, and then you don't have to buy seeds for next year.
Yeah, and so you have found that the organization of the garden, with say certain species in the middle, certain around the garden, that's the best way, or is it for aesthetic purposes that it looks better? Say,
no, it's actually meant to be functional. So it looks beautiful because there's always something blossoming, but it is also functional in that it's feeding bees. So I call my book a Canada Food Guide for Bees because it's the plants that you can plant in your area. And native plants are also very important, like the native berries, the salmon berries. I've got salmon berries in my backyard and some wild raspberries, and the bees absolutely love them. And my husband looks out the back window and he says, "What's that plant taking over the backyard?" And I say, "Which one?" Because I'm always about feeding the bees. So there's no room to have a dinner party in our backyard anymore for humans. It's just a dinner party for bees.
Now, are there certain plants, certain things herbs even that we shouldn't plant because they would say scare off the bees?
Well, that's also a very good question. One thing that I tell people is that you should stay away from what are called doubles. And these are the really frilly versions of plants. Like sometimes hollyhocks, they have these varieties which are very frilly, like lots of petticoats. And they have no pollen and nectar. It's been bred out of them because this is a kind of a novelty. And I blame it on the Victorians because the Victorians wore a lot of petticoats. So I hope it'd be their fault. But actually, it started much, much earlier. It's just this kind of trend. And that's not great for bees. People think that they're allergic to the pollen that bees carry, but that's not true. It's actually wind-borne pollen that is the problem. The pollen that bees collect is really sticky, and it doesn't get up your nose unless you actually stick the flower up your nose. It's not going to bother you. So there's a bit of a misconception about pollen. You really do want pollen in your garden. And a lot of the allergies are blamed on flowers, but, you know, it's often trees.
Mm. What about, because a lot of us live in urban settings, the balcony in the apartment or the condo, maybe the only space we have, can that be transformed into a victory garden?
It's a fabulous place. And, you know, as long as you're about only about 3 stories high You can really make a difference. So you can plant things like, I recommend scarlet runner beans because they climb up and you can have a nice trellis with these beautiful red blossoms that feed the bees, and then you can also pick the beans. Lavender is fantastic on a balcony because the scent will actually draw the bees right to your balcony. And you can even put a little mason bee condo on your balcony, and those beautiful little non-stinging bees will come and visit you, and you can have fun with them.
Back to gardens on the ground for just a sec. Weeds, I mean, are they of value to bees as much as, say, things that we would plant, flowers, vegetables, etc.?
Yes. Some weeds are fantastic for bees. And, you know, it depends on the situation, and not every place is a great place to leave weeds. But, for instance, on boulevards, the dandelions are fantastic for bees, and they provide food for a wide variety of species, so we should just let them be. And as long as the weed is feeding the bees and it's not too invasive, then I say let it be.
So the takeaway from all of this is that if we are walking down the street or in our gardens or in our homes and a wasp or a bee comes up to us, just be friendly and not try to swat the thing, right?
That's a really good way to put it. And I tell children to give bees the space to do their work. They're really busy. They just want to be able to make a beeline to the flower.
Mm-hmm.
So just don't get between the bee and the flower, you know, let the bee do their work. And the more time you spend in gardens, just take it really slowly. And, like, you know, I know it's natural to be afraid of bees and wasps, but it's actually just take some time to get to know them and hang around them, and you might fall in love with them, just like I have.
Yeah, and if they fly into your office or your house or something like that, help them get out and not try to kill them, I guess, because, I mean, the tendency is to swat them to death.
Yeah, I know. Well, I've actually had a bumblebee. I had a bumblebee in my washing machine once, because what happens is they come into the mouse holes. We live in an old Vancouver house, and we've got mouse holes that come down into the basement, so that it came into the mouse hole, and that's where they put their nest. But instead of going back outside, she actually came inside, and she went into the washing machine. So what I do is I take her out. You can put her on a little piece of paper in a box. Take her outside, put her in the sun, and feed her a little mixture of 50% sugar dissolved in water. And she'll be able to give the energy and then fly back and hopefully find her way back home.
So in your work as a public speaker talking to students and as well as on this book tour, are you finding that because adults, say, nowadays have done a great deal to screw everything up, that future generations are, say, getting this and understanding the need for bees and say, mending their ways and will grow up understanding the vital role that bees play in our ecosystem?
Well, that is my deep, deep wish, because people are calling me a bee evangelist. I'm trying to spread the word. I'm trying to teach the idea that, you know, we really need to take this on and to make friends with bees and to be their allies. And instead of making their lives miserable and poisoning them, we actually need to support them because our lives depend on it.
Yeah. And that's the one thing that I picked up after reading your book is just how we depend on bees, and I mean, we've done a great deal to screw it up, and we can fix these things and fix them well, I guess.
Well, yeah, that's why I'm concerned about the headlines, because it's always doom and gloom, and gloom. But it's really important, like, when people get this kind of learned helplessness, they feel like they can't do anything. It's going to make them really frustrated. But, you know, I have a child, and I want him to have hope, and I want to show him, if you want to change the world, you got to get off your butt and plant some gardens.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're doing great work, and this book is also a terrific read. Good luck with it, and thanks for your time today, Lori.
Thanks. I love talking to you. It's been great.
The same. Victory Gardens for Bees is the title of the book. The subtitle, A DIY Guide to Saving the Bees. It's from Douglas and McIntyre. It's author Lori Weidenhammer. Joined me on the line from Winnipeg in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plantum.